Radio Verte presents Ahuga by Corey Zimmerman.
Ahuga, Act One. New Orleans, 1925. A ghostly sound of drumming catches the wind and echoes through the quiet, abandoned borough, luring me back onto the balcony. I look out over the stillness of Storyville as three scantily clad, white-hipped women make their way down the once buzzing street below in search of greener pastures. Storyville, the story. "Shit, I got 50 drinks to go," said Isabel, a table girl, more typically known as a clandestine whore. "And it's almost 3. "Girl, you better get out there," said Clementine, a fellow table girl. "I gotta piss," said Isabel, as Clementine made her way to the front with a round of drinks for a table of thirsty soldiers. $1, fellas," she said as a drunken officer pulled her to his lap, showing the boys how it's done. The chandelier swayed in an ocean of intoxication as the floorboards squeaked in harmony with the stand-up bass. The boys cheered and swilled, and the piano tune tinkled above the steady roar of jiving, laughing, and shouting, pouring out the open doors into the early morning air. A man with his trousers about his knees stumbled out the front door to vomit in the street. But it ain't no thing, just another night in Storyville. You see, as New Orleans became a playground for gambling, music, drugs, alcohol, and sex, over time, authorities squeezed all that vice into a tiny area, making it easier to regulate. One little back-of-town neighborhood called the Swamp, the Tenderloin, or simply Storyville. Storyville, where stories were made, and stories were told, where jazz was born. It most certainly went through puberty and lost its virginity as budding musicians made their way, hauling coal to the district's brothels. The district, born of multiple fathers, upper-class white men who had made it a mission to reclaim their city from the devil by removing temptation from sight, as they feared the cursed dance halls and cabarets offered tempting employment opportunities for respectable women who may yearn to break loose. Clementine worked ruthlessly, shaking down as many coins as she could by sunrise, seeing if she failed to sell 100 drinks by daybreak, the house would keep every coin and she'd be walking home broke. So she pulled out her breasts and buried the officer's face deep in her cleavage as she propositioned, "Want to go upstairs?" Her behavior was rather blunt. Seeing a table girl was generally required to be subtle and, well, more clandestine. But it was late, and the witching hour upon them, and knowing she could get away with just about anything shy of murder, she made a plan to let him relish in his desire, letting that officer treat her like a dog, not exactly what she dreamed of when seeking employment in the district, as she envisioned something more akin to fixing a college boy's tie, as he would be more than willing to pay for his drinks, called her ma'am, and kissed her on the hand, despite the fact that she felt low, bleeding coins out of this fellow who thought he knew it all too well, and it could be seen on Clementine's face, if only one were to look. Sorrow. She went about her plan, begging like a dog for the 50 cents he owed her, and in which she owed the house, "and I don't get paid for this," she thought, as the sailor sucked on her nipples, relinquishing only for a breath and a quick swill of bourbon, all without putting up a dime for the round he had bought for the boys. Come 2 hours later, as the officer pulled up his trousers in a room upstairs, instead of handing over the bits he owed Clementine, the cheap bastard stabbed her in the heart with a 4-inch blade, as he called her a whore, and she bled out on the floor. The story was brushed under the velvet rug, so to speak, by none other than those fathers who stepped aside as the U.S. military shut the district down, sending the jazz musicians on an exodus. But shutting Storyville down was not a matter of locking doors and flipping off red lights alone. Seeing as the prostitutes were evicted, the rents dropped more than 75%. There was even talk of obtaining a plantation house and fixing it up as a dormitory to train any former whores who wished to lead a better life in hairdressing and manicuring. But that was not likely to happen. And as fires and fears were dampened by patrolling fire marshals, the prostitutes moved out gradually and peacefully, with their possessions in two-wheeled carts and wheelbarrows. As the more affluent madams had their maids carry their personal belongings as they walked ahead with their small dogs on leashes and canaries in cages, while black jazz bands played on the corner, "Mirror My God to Thee." Storyville's last night was quiet, the press reported. No wild orgies, just a typical suicide attempt by Edna Morris, a former prostitute. New Orleans, 1925. I still stand on my balcony, that ghostly drumming still drifting downwind from Congo Square. Congo Square. The only place slaves have been allowed to dance without getting a good whooping. Palace of the Niggas, they called it back in the days, when black maids swatted flies away from the already spread out quilts upon the grassy lawn. A platter of sliced peaches sprinkled with sugar, attracting the swarm, along with wedges of pimento cheese, a pan of cornbread, and a jar of fresh squeezed lemonade. A white lady, carrying a crocheted umbrella to shade the high noon sun, her white children dressed in white, two boys and a girl on their best behavior, in the awesome presence of their white daddy, a white southern gentleman, strolling just behind with a thin bamboo cane. A rather stiff knee refused to bend, the gentleman plopping down on his rear, preferring not to be touched by black skin in the light of day, as he preferred to keep taboo to the night. His rather severe face accompanied a rather serious public persona. Still, he allowed his children to run about free, believing in his heart that they were safe enough in earshot, though one maid hollered after them, as she had been expected to do, and an ornery laughter persisted, as those little bastards, as she called them in private and under her breath, outran her efforts. The gentleman lit a cigar. That fine afternoon, the family had come to see the Negroes, as they were called on good days, play their goatskin drums. The cadence of the exotic beat was stimulating and brought about many a pleasant smile, and indeed to the white lady's face, while the gentleman preferred to keep his earnest gaze, seeing he had an earnest reputation to keep, to the periphery. His mustache was finely oiled, his eyes squinting. It was a sunny day after all. The square was filled with old money, lavishly adorned ladies of status, and other gentlemen with their own severe scowls and stiff mannerisms. Simple gestures of gratitude for their female counterparts, aloft in picnicking, conversing, all while entertained by the pounding of flesh by that darker race. Old African music, a rhythm, a dark heart echoing from a past well beyond Congo Square and the old plantations of the South to a far-off land. The dark sound sweeping these white ladies right off their feet, right under the noses of the racialistic gentlemen. The racialistic gentlemen, puffed on cigars. The white lady looked on in astonishment, and then with a squint of prying interest, as she narrowed in on one particular Negro playing his goatskin drum. Young, arms defined, strapping, chest unruly, flesh dark, sweaty, and glistening. Jaw, chiseled, cheekbones high, eyes wild with fury, yet solely focused on bringing his drum to life. her own glazed-over eyes begging one to wonder if she might let that midnight cat out of the bag on a sunny afternoon. Judging by the corners of her lips turned upward, the vein in her thin, slender neck thumping wildly, the veil before her passion thinning as she grasped desperately onto the urge, pulling at the grass so fraught, so hungry to be free. A fine specimen of humanity, she thought, and those cheekbones to die for. She professed with dilated pupils and shallow breath, her maids hearing her thoughts aloud as they minded their own, as they turned away to swap more flies from those loudening thoughts. Oh, how lovely it would be to have him as my own. Leaving Congo Square, the maids wrangled the children along with the picnic bundle. The crocheted umbrella protected the lady's pale skin from the afternoon sun, and she peered back over her shoulder, lip clutched right in her teeth. The gentleman grabbed a paper from a newsboy and read the headline aloud. Another child found slain in Storyville. Oh my, said the lady. How horrible. Finally breaking free of her trance, though beat still pounding in the marrow of her bones. World's gone to hell in a handbasket, ma'am, said one of the maids. With a limp, the gentleman glared ahead at his own brood, skipping about Storyville carefree, as the lady gave one last lingering glance back for one last peek of flesh, so dark as the night. The story. So goddamn dark, I say, crinkling the sheet up to toss it in the can. Again, I grab the goddamn bottle, raise it up, and say, here's the prohibition, and pour it directly into my mouth until I choke, spraying Sam's rum all over the mirror before me. I stand and walk once more to the balcony as a carriage passes by for somewhere beyond, trotting hooves relinquishing a brutal silence as the drumming dies out, as even the crickets avoid the back of town at night. So how do you like New Orleans? One might ask. I love it, I would say. What made you stick around? One might ask. And I might say, I'm a drunkard in the wettest town this side of the Mississippi. Hell, the fattest, most wide open of the whole damn lot. What's not to love? But as I look out across the rooftops, coffee brewing on the coal stove, one knows truly why I am here. Little bird, can you hear me? Little bird, are you there? I hear nothing. But I know she is there, amongst the rubble, distant, constant roar that is New Orleans. New Orleans, the past running deep through her veins, haunting the lyrics of her songs, stories that ring, wail, and moan aloud in my ears. But in my ears, no, not a single mourning bird. Fat Tuesday. In my tired eyes, I see ghosts hovering above rooftops in the very lightning of day. But no, no longer you. You've grown weary of my ways. I finish off my coffee with a splash of rum, fill my flask, shove it deep into my pocket, and follow the breeze carrying the cry of weeping trumpets down the long avenue lined with live oak, adorned in Spanish moss, absorbing the soul of the early morning mist. Fat Tuesday. The Skull and Bone Gang stampede through Treme, offering sun pie knocks on the residents' doors, waking them with loud shouts, reminding the people of their mortality, and to wake up and live while they can. A black Indian man carries a tribal flag. Behind follows the wild man, who yields a tomahawk. The wild man guards the big chief. The big chief decides which direction they shall go and which tribes they shall attack. Percussionists follow the feather-laden tribe. Revelers misunderstand their hodgepodge language in African dialect. The Skull and Bone Gang chant and fill the chill morning air.
I remember one morning I remember well.
Chants the Big Chief.
Yo.
Shout the Indians.
I say Kuti Feladon.
I remember one morning I remember well. Shouts the Chief.
Yo.
The Indians shout.
They had two spy boys running, and they had the big queen raising hell. Ooh, ayo. Somebody rap my mama. Tell my dad. Ooh, ay. Tell him I, Chief White Cloud, that Mardi Gras morning, don't you make me mad.
The Indians dance. Bright sequins, billowing ostrich feathers of red, blue, and green, celebrating the dead as dynamic, existential presences that like to dance. Crossing paths with another tribe, the spirits taunt the big chiefs, who in turn taunt one another as their drumbeats intertwine. Fat Tuesday. This day is to be the day of both reveling and bloodshed, a time to settle grudges, not with needle and thread, but with spear and knife, and capella chants in true African fashion. The big chief sings out.
My grandma and your grandma was sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm not gonna set your flag on fire.
And the Indians.
Talking about, hey now, hey now. Ako, ako, ande. Giacomo Fino, hey no, nay. Giacomo Fino, nay. Looking at my king all dressed in red. Ako, ako, ande. I bet you $5, I'll kill you dead. Giacomo Fino, nay. Talking about, hey now, hey now. Ako, ako, ande. Giacomo Fino, hey no, nay. Giacomo Fino, nay.
The big chief.
My flag boy and your flag boy were sitting by the fire. My flag boy told your flag boy, I'm gonna set your flag on fire.
The Indians.
Talk about hey now, hey now. Aka waka onde. Giacomo Fino, ain't no name. Giacomo Finane. See all that guy's dressed in green? Aka waka onde. No, he's not a man, he's a loving machine. Giacomo Finane. Talk about hey now, hey now. Aka waka onde. Giacomo Fino, ain't no name. Giacomo Finane.
Winding words that come to blows as blades collide. Steel on steel, steel on flesh. Blood in the streets. Both tribes continue upon their way, carrying their dead.
Hey now, hey now, hey now, hey now. Ako, ako, onde.
I plunge straight into the sea of bowler hats, stilt walking skeletons and baby dolls, innocent and vile, dodging a procession of stoic clowns in silver, horns and brass gone to my head. An insect-covered Model T parts the crowd, and I follow in its wake, along with a band of coneheads, masked stilt walkers with wandering eyes and brilliant white teeth of cerebral jubilation, all gone to my head. Balconies slouch under the weight of men fishing for tits with strings of beads. Beads, shiny. Tits, slouchy and firm, desperate for shiny things. Landships glide by, sailed by the ghosts of French conquistadors, as I twist and turn about men donning their wives' lingerie, cheeks pink with rose powder, butt cheeks spanked raw, and walking canes and staffs and tinfoil hats of future's time, all mixed in with the palm skirts of the Caribbean past. The Zulu Social Club. Men in kilts, men dressed as pirates and real pirates, and those asleep underfoot by 9 a.m., encamped out on the curb before the Great American Clothing Store. Stars and stripes, and flutes and whistles, and sex and blues, and that almighty jazz. Sexful sunflowers and pollination, and moaning and groaning, and rubbing and grabbing, and haggling and whirling, dizzy and daisy, all spun out on the zodiac. Barreling barrels and paid off coppers, copping a fill, filling a cup, all in the midst of sunshine, all along the French avenues, all along Bourbon Street, with its haint blue milk painted porches, doors, frames, and shutters, and blue glass bottles hung on the branches of leafless trees, trapping ghosts and spirits of water vapor, and the spirits high in the sky, even while the haunting spirits of the dark inner world chase me to exhalation and jubilation, all before the wild sun has even hit high noon. I plop down on a curb next to a rambling man with mighty words.
Voudoir, voodoo, 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 voodoir, voodoo, 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 and them hoodoo boo hacks. Them spirits roaming, killing, healing, turning snakes to staffs, magic and miracles, sacred circle dancing, blood sacrifice and deviation, supernatural malady, possession, ancestors, slaves, slave masters, and them ignorant immigrants none the wiser, Mr. Model T Folds, and them people's days of peoples and seas of peoples under them magic spells and mighty words. Cause way we tell it, hoodoo go way back in mankind. In hoodoo, anything that you do, the plan of God, understanding God is something in everything you do, good or bad, he got something to do with it. You get what coming your way, just what's for you, you gonna get. Good and evil, I done read them 7 books of Moses, 7, 8, and 9 time already. The hoodoo come from way back yonder, from the time that Moses written that book. The 7 book of Moses. Oh yeah, that fast luck, that love fuck, fast fuck, ha ha ha. That old hoodoo man, gula gula, I hoodoo you, hoodoo man. Well inebriated, I drift from the crowd, down one of the many French Quarter offshoots, but one of the few not flooded with inebriety. It is time I take in a company of my own. Now that all the madness is settled in, swirled about and mixed with my blood, to digest just a bit as my head whirls about, to catch my pace, steady my rhythm, and not dive face first into the curb for the night. I stroll south through the Tangle Belt. Strolling may be an overstatement, and I'm not actually aware of where I am, but I assume somewhere within St. Louis, Dauphine, Iberville, and North Rampart. I pass a mix of bars, cabarets, and nightclubs, bleeding their jitney dances into the street. After passing a few vaudeville houses, saloons, and dance halls, I stop momentarily before the Lyric Theater. The ladies of the night are out heavy, having migrated here after the story of Storyville came to an end. I continue on, words getting the best of me, as they tend to do 36 fingers in, and I'm juggling sentences, rearranging and balancing on a precarious tip, that point in my mind that holds still amongst the swirl of madness, that space where I grab what I want, and equally discard back into the chaotic flow what I choose to forsake, attempting to piece together something grand, something greater than my sober mind can articulate in the daylight hours. As in this drunken state where my toes may wander, the precipice of my inner mind is in that perfect harmony. I am the master in the middle of the storm. I link this and that, move this over here and that over there, and so on, twisting and turning a wordsmith at work. All while the tips of my toes do whatever the hell they want, whatever it is they do, leading me where they might. This juggling shall continue until things fall into their proper place, until harmony and poise solidify, the whole structure encapsulating precisely what I want to say, to articulate an exact essence, as it nestles in like an earworm, stands poised on the tip of my tongue, tickles the tips of my fingers, causing them to fidget restlessly, begging to be solidified into one sentient statement, to be carved into stone, laid to rest eternally in the fibers of hot-pressed pulp, from where its meaningful marking shall glow from within. And as I bumble about the urban forest, like grown boys do, I question a conjunction, and I misplace the pronoun, just as I am distracted by something faint but beautiful. And all that concentrated force in the deep center of my mind is diverted as it homes in on a sweet melody of what sounds like a tiny bird on a branch, alone and vulnerable in the night, somewhere just beyond, afar of the madness, yet right here within. It's not in my mind, I make sure of that, and as I pull my fingers out of my ears, there it is again. I look around in an oak for a shadowed perch in the moonlight, at what whistles like a reed in the wind, but a lotus that howls as it drifts through the leaves, a song that fills the desolate chamber of my heart, in this calcified cell that is the skull, a bittersweet sentiment faintly carving itself into the wall of my skull. Hard times is here and everywhere you go. Times is harder than they ever been before. You know that people, they drifting from door to door. I follow the voice south from door to door,
as it just barely slips in and out, like the coming and going of the breeze, living and dying and living again. But you can't find no heaven, I don't care where you go. People, if I can ever get up off this hard-killing floor, Lord, I'll never get down this low no more. I follow its lead as a veil of mist rolls in, shrouding a dark figure who appears and lurches near in the middle of the back street before me. A large, painted red Indian man with a strong tobacco scent. Our eyes meet and lay right into one another. This spirit dressed in great American clothes and Levi dungarees. The Indian takes one giant step with his hands folded tightly before his chest, before reaching out to seize my heart as he walks straight into me, beautifully, terrifyingly powerful and absorbing. I stumble backward a step, the force knocking me off balance, as a bolt of thunder strikes right through the night. Wide, zigzagging electricity across the sky, I shudder, shake in the current and spin around twice. But he's gone. No one to be seen amongst the thunder that hits hard. A sudden rain pounding the rooftops like cannonballs. And with yet another flash. But you can't find no heaven, I don't care where you go.